At first you may not be aware of it, but gradually ally you will realize that thoughts from without thoughts of an uplifting and helpful nature, are drifting into your mind from nowhere. You may think, yet nowhere, in this case, means God. Fortunately for myself, I had formed a habit of seeking guidance in this way, so I soon became conscious of help being given me from a higher source, in order that I might carry on and do my work and daily duties as efficiently as possible. I felt sure that my husband would from time to time, not all the time, only earthbound spirits are likely to do that, be able to contact me, see me, hear me, know something of what I might be doing and feeling. All this I took for granted, and simply made up my mind to live and speak and think in such a way that would help and reassure him as regards my own life. But another, far more important urge dominated me. I must know where he is, follow him onto his new territory, even if only for a moment's glimpse. But I must do it, I must. Chapter 14. Nothing venture, nothing win. On a few occasions, yet often with long intervals in between, I had made astral excursions into the other world. So far they had always happened unexpectedly. I have described them in a book called My Life Into Worlds, so won't repeat them here. Wonderfully convincing as they had been to me, proving beyond all shadow of doubt that there is another world and another life awaiting us beyond the grave, I had not been conscious of the intense desire for such experiences as I now possessed, or perhaps I should say, possessed me. And I was fated to discover that extreme anxiety to penetrate into the conditions of that other life defeats its own object. But I was determined to succeed, and I feel that a record of my attempts and subsequent failures and successes will be helpful to others who feel that tremendous urge to know what has happened to the one who has gone into the shadow land, or the great unknown, as it still is to a great number of people. A question of tremendous importance arises at this point. I feel that many may wish to make the effort, and find out what lies beyond death, but they are held back by the thought, is it right to do so? It all depends on your object, and on the use you make of your knowledge. If these experiences help you to help yourself, and then help you to help others in their perplexity and sorrow, yes, surely it is all to the good, as we say. Are there dangers? Yes, I should think so. Just as there are dangers assailing the efforts of everybody who does anything of any importance in the ordinary daily life on Earth. Aviation, motoring, chemical research, swimming, only to mention a few, are fraught with great danger, but that does not deter us from participating in such pursuits. I think it may well be the better thing for us to be able to contact the other and higher planes ourselves, and meet our friends there in their own territory, so to speak, than to expect them to meet us all the way, and be compelled to visit us on our lower plane. But we must remember that for us to visit theirs would mean a certain amount of self-discipline physically, mentally, and spiritually. Life on the earth plane does not make it easy for us to create such conditions in and around ourselves such as would enable us to succeed often in our attempts to travel to those higher planes. Therefore it is comforting to know that our friends who have passed beyond the veil can and do visit us from time to time. Did not our Lord himself take pity on those who loved and mourned him, and when he visited them, spoke and touched them, and was touched by them? Did he not create a precedent by doing what he did? Above all, it showed his intense sympathy with grief, and as he still lives and feels for us, so he will understand our griefs for our dear ones. And he will rejoice if we succeed in our efforts to find those angel faces which we have loved and lost a while. This is, I feel, a solution to a problem that often frets the Christian's mind, though he, of all men, should know the answer. J. M. Gibbon said, "The presence of great questions gives hope that we are in the neighborhood of great answers, and that is the when I was a child changed slowly but surely into the now I am a man. So the now we see in a mirror darkly shall also change is, in fact, every moment changing into the then face to face, our upturned and wondering faces wet and radiant also with happy tears, for if once he wept with those that wept, because they had lost, he will keep also in blissful sympathy with those that weep because they have found." There are three different ways in which we can contact those who have passed over, and there are three different places or planes on which we can meet them. When I use the word meet, I want to convey the idea of actually being on the same plane with them, and functioning in the same kind of body for the time being. This is quite different to psychically contacting the spirit world through the faculty of clairvoyance or clairaudience. We may go to a materializing seance, and there see a manifestation of the dead built up from the ectoplasmic materials drawn mostly from the medium's body, and probably augmented by the sitters. I want to draw a very clear line of demarcation between these two methods, and the power of projecting the etheric body which we all possess to some degree, and might possess in greater measure if we had the time and will to practice doing it. In this book I shall not refer to the projection of the etheric for the purpose of traveling in the earth conditions. Many people have experienced the sensation of finding themselves floating above, and looking down upon their physical body. By persistent practice they find they can travel to other places on the earth, witness certain happenings, return with a clear memory of what has happened, and subsequent inquiries have proved them to have been correct in their accounts of what they saw or heard. My main object is concerned with proving that it is possible to travel to higher planes, and contact those friends who have passed into the beyond, and I must confess there is a very personal feeling at the back of my desire to present the subject in this particular light, because after my husband's passing, I felt I must find out all I possibly could as to how he was and where he was. As I said, there are three distinct methods of contact through astral or etheric functioning. First, the dead can visit us on the earth plane in their etheric bodies, but it is easier for us to see them when they do so, if we ourselves are functioning in our etheric bodies at the same time. This, I find, can, and does, often happen. One's etheric body succeeds in moving out from the physical. It may be only a few inches, but it is just sufficient to allow us to be aware of, and contact, the etheric visitor from the other sphere. This usually occurs when we have just begun to fall asleep or as we are awakening from sleep. In either case we have to emerge from a sleep condition, shallow and light though it may be in the former case, or deep as in the latter. It appears to me that the physical brain must be either asleep, or extremely passive in order to allow the etheric body to move out from the physical. Among Western people it is not usual to find subjects who can become sufficiently passive while remaining awake. The actual sleep may be of only a few minutes' duration. Sometimes it seems as if one had only just drifted over the edge of slumber, yet during that time one has managed to exteriorize the etheric body. Consciousness may operate very quickly in the etheric, and as it moves out of the physical body, it becomes almost immediately aware of any astral visitor who is present in the room. In order to register this knowledge on the physical brain, the consciousness moves the etheric body back into the physical as expeditiously and quietly as it can, and in such a case, our minds transfer the impression of what we feel or see in our etheric body to our physical body. Unfortunately, such an experience usually lasts for a very short time, because of the effort made by the mind in registering its impressions on the physical brain. If we are not frightened or distressed by the experience on awakening, there is a possibility that it may continue for a brief period, and that now, while wide awake in the physical body, we are able to see and hear what takes place in the astral. How many of us have had the experience of waking, and still thinking we were dreaming, even though we could see our material surroundings with physical eyes? During this experience it will often be noticed that a cataleptic condition prevails during the entire duration of the phenomenon. Many people imagine this cataleptic state to be part of a nightmare from which they have awakened, especially if, as so often happens, the subconsciousness has thrown up into the conscious mind some long-forgotten incident that has caused fear or sorrow in the past, or even a repressed fear that has no actual foundation in fact. So far as we remember, may be responsible for a mental picture being thrown on the screen of our mind at the exact moment we become conscious again in the physical body. If this happens, this false mental image may eradicate the entire etheric experience, and thrust itself forward into the consciousness so vividly that it is accepted as the real substance of our astral projection, which we disappointedly dismiss from our minds under the impression that we have had a most unpleasant dream or nightmare, which held us in its grip even after we wakened up. Chapter 15. The Halfway World. A second way of contacting them is by meeting in a kind of halfway or intermediary place. It appears to me as if this place, or perhaps condition of being is a better description, is indeed exactly halfway between the earth and the etheric world. It is a half world. In it we seem to be only half awake, and I have a strong feeling that they, and when I mention they or them I want you to understand that I refer to those who have permanently passed over into the etheric world, have themselves entered into the sleep state, or a semi-conscious state, in order to meet us again. I am impelled to use the term, halfway. This is not always a satisfactory method to either party, and it usually arises from the intense desire held by two people who are recently separated by death, to contact each other at all costs, under any conditions. This natural impatience precipitates a meeting under the only circumstances that are possible until one or both have progressed to the stage when they can meet under happier conditions. This halfway state is very much affected, if not entirely governed by, subconscious suggestions from the mind of the one who is still living in the physical body. The third method leads to the most wonderful experience that can happen to any human being, I think. It means that one goes, in one's etheric body, to the actual plane where he or she whom we are seeking really dwells, and that one brings back a complete and perfect memory of all that one has seen or heard over there. Anyone who has succeeded in doing this will indeed realize that angels have rolled the stones away. Nothing can erase, or even dim, the memory of such a glorious experience. For many years previous to my husband's death, I had realized the possibility of visiting the spiritual planes of life, and I prayed hard that if it were in accordance with God's will, and only then, that I might be allowed to see the place where my husband now dwelt, his surroundings and himself in them, to see him in his natural setting, as it were. I realized I might have to wait some time for this to happen, and that some special preparation might be necessary in order for me to undertake such a wonderful astral journey. When it happens spontaneously, one may not be aware of the many causes that have contributed to its success. One is apt to look upon it as something that happened accidentally, whatever that may mean, because it happened unexpectedly. Of all that led up to it one may be totally unaware, but when one is trying consciously to bring about some definite result in anything, whether it be astral projection, music, painting, singing, chemistry, or anything else, one usually has to approach one's end by many very definite steps or methods. So I set out on my quest fortified with a certain knowledge of the possibility of the many failures and difficulties that might befall me before I attained my object. Even so, I was not quite prepared for the nature of some of the phenomena that happened. Several weeks passed by after my husband's death, and I appeared to achieve no success in visiting him, until the night of Saturday, March 23, 1935, when I retired to bed about the usual time, and went to sleep fairly soon. I began to dream about something. The usual kind of mixture of imagination and subconscious memories. It is important to realize that a dream that is only a dream often merges into a true astral experience, and on emerging from the latter, one often passes through the dream state again before awakening. In fact, the dream state is a kind of gateway into and out of the real astral experience. With a certain amount of practice, one is able to distinguish the difference between the dream and the true condition. In the astral one nearly always knows that one is having an out-of-the-body experience. Everything happens in a clear, orderly, and consistent manner, whereas most dreams consist of a fantastic jumble of scenes and happenings in which one jumps precipitately from one scene to another, performing all kinds of impossible feats. I did not remember what I dreamt this particular night, but I suddenly emerged from it into a different condition. I realized I was in the astral, but I felt sure I was not on the etheric plane where my husband would be living. I guessed that I was in one of the halfway places. I could not see the distant scenery, only the near surroundings were visible to me. Outside this radius there seemed to be a kind of grayish mist. I noticed this vaguely, because my whole attention was riveted on my husband, who stood before me looking somewhat vacantly in front of him. He seemed to be half asleep. I quickly moved toward him and kissed him on the lips. He started slightly, and looked at me as if he was very surprised to see me. This expression quickly faded, and one of relief and gladness took its place, and he returned my kiss several times. As he did so, I remembered that I had been in this same place once before since his passing, but that I must have forgotten on waking. During that previous visit he had been less awake, and I had looked at him in some consternation, wondering should I speak to him or not. Would it give him a shock? A voice belonging to someone outside my area of visibility spoke and said, "You may kiss him." I did so once, but he seemed not to be aware of it, and I had immediately lost control, and had withdrawn to my physical condition. Often when one is functioning in the etheric world, one remembers having been there before. The memory is more clear than when one remembers in the physical world something that one did yesterday. On this second, as I now knew it to be, occasion, I felt myself drawing away, back to the earth condition, and awoke remembering everything quite distinctly, but feeling rather disappointed with my experience. I felt I had not seen my husband at his best, but I think he realized that he, too, had been functioning for the time being on a plane that was not his own natural one, just as I had been doing. Chapter 16. A strange experiment. After this experience it struck me that it would perhaps be more satisfactory if my husband were able to visit me in my own room on Earth, where the surroundings would be familiar to me, and also to him, though it was no longer his real plane of existence. He would remember the room, and expect to find me in it. I think he caught my thoughts, and made up his mind to try the experiment, which he evidently set out to accomplish 2 nights later. I had gone to bed about 11 o'clock, and was lying on my left side, quietly preparing for sleep. The room was not quite dark, as I had a night light burning. I had been dozing for a few minutes, probably, when I was awakened by feeling something solid insert itself under my left shoulder. I opened my eyes, and in the dim light I saw my husband's form lying facing me on the edge of the bed. My senses were alert, and I kept absolute control of myself in order not to do anything that might startle him, or disturb conditions. His right arm was placed under my left shoulder, and I distinctly felt the pressure of his fingers on the back of my shoulder. The strange part was that his arm must have passed through the material structure of the mattress and pillow, yet appeared to be perfectly solid. My theory is that I was conscious in my etheric body as well as in my physical body. It was my etheric body on which my husband's arm was making an impression. In other words, my etheric body was feeling his etheric body, and my mind was registering this fact in my physical body and brain. Consciousness was, as I said before, functioning for the moment in both bodies. As I looked at my husband, I could see the china ornaments on the mantelpiece just a few feet away, gleaming in the light from the street lamp outside, and the night light in the room. This only lasted a few seconds, neither of us spoke. Quite suddenly my husband disappeared, leaving me with a deep sense of peace and comfort, and I fell into a long, restful, and dreamless sleep. This deep, peaceful slumber usually follows a true astral experience, whether this takes place on the earth plane or on the astral plane itself. The next morning I awoke, and began thinking about the wonderful phenomenon of the previous night, and wished I had been able to see my husband's features and expression more clearly. It worried me that I could not remember, or visualize from memory, the color of his eyes as they appeared when he was in good health during his earlier days on Earth. In his latter years and especially in his illness they had become dull and faded in color. Only once had I had an impression that his eyes had regained their former clearness, and that was on the day of the funeral, when I had seen him sitting in front of the car, wearing the dark overcoat, and he had turned his head round and smiled at me. The friend who saw him in the crematorium had apparently seen his eyes more clearly than I, and in her letter to me she had mentioned his eyes are very bright, and very blue. The night following his wonderful visit to me, I retired to bed about the same time. I again lay on my left side. I cannot remember going to sleep, but I had apparently done so, and awakened again very soon. With my eyes open, I saw my husband bending down, apparently looking at me. There was, as before, a fair light in the room from outside and from the night light, but without these aids I could have seen his face clearly, because it was surrounded by a kind of luminous glow, which revealed every feature quite distinctly. I particularly noticed his eyes. They were, as my friend had said, exceptionally bright and blue. His skin was tanned and healthy looking. His age when here on earth was 70, but now he looked about 45. His face was a little fuller than in his physical life, and altogether he looked wonderfully well. I looked at him for at least 6 or 7 seconds, and when he disappeared I remember saying fervently and loudly, "Thank God." After this I am afraid I could not help wishing that something of the same kind might happen again. Every night I went to bed expecting it, looking for it. Probably my mind was too alert and anxious, and some time elapsed before I had a similar experience. Chapter 17. Mind ACTS on Matter. Several weeks went by, in which I had remarkable evidence of my husband's existence. It came from various sources, which I will not describe here, wonderful as some of them were, because my main object in writing this book is to endeavor to prove the existence of the etheric body, and its power of functioning on the physical and etheric planes. On one occasion I had an interesting example of the effect that an etheric body can produce upon what we term physical matter. I think there is no doubt that the astral or etheric body is composed of material that is to some extent comparable with matter as we know it on Earth, and that by virtue of its similar nature it can and does affect material objects on the Earth. One Saturday early in May, 1935, I spent a weekend with a friend whose hospitality my husband and I had often enjoyed during my husband's Earth life. In the evening we went to a theater to see a rather rollicking review. On the way there and back we drove through a district where my husband and I had spent a very happy time together many years ago. Memories of the hardships and difficulties that we had faced happily, because we were together, came surging back, and in spite of all my good resolutions, I could not help feeling somewhat desolate, thinking of the many years that might be in front of me without his physical companionship. So when we arrived back at the house, I was feeling a little sad. The room I was given was one which I had not occupied before. A friend of my hostess, whom I had only met once, had been using it until quite recently, and had left many photographs behind, all of people unknown to me. There were 2 single beds in the room, and beside one of them stood a smallish oak table about 2 feet square, quite a strongly made, solid table for its size. On it I had placed my husband's photograph. Just before undressing, I went over, picked up the photograph, and aloud asked my husband whether he had been aware of my thoughts while I was passing through the neighborhood we both knew so well. While doing this, I mechanically placed the photo on the bed nearby, placed my hands lightly on the table top, and still thinking aloud I said, "I've got no mediumistic power with which to move tables or anything else by myself, as some people have, and as you undoubtedly had when you were here. If only I had that kind of power, you might use it now, and move this table as a signal that you were with me on our way to the theater, and that you did know all my thoughts." Almost before I had finished the sentence, to my intense surprise, the table leapt in the air, took a jump forward and upward, hit me in the region of my waist, and sank back again quietly, as if carefully controlled by unseen hands. I was astonished, to say the least of it, but comforted also, as I knew that it was impossible to account for the phenomenon by any normal, as we call it, means. At the very second that the table rose, or perhaps I should say for 1 or possibly 2 seconds prior to its rising, I felt a curious blank feeling in my solar plexus. I felt it in my mind also, but without losing consciousness even for a fraction of time. What actually happened was that my mood, my mental outstretching to the unseen, had put me in a suitable condition to bring about an exteriorization of my etheric body, either wholly or partially, and the combination of astral forces drawn from it, and from the etheric body of my husband, had been directed into, or under, the table, with just sufficient power to levitate it. I think that this ability to project one's etheric double, voluntarily or accidentally, either for a short or long period, is the cause of many of the physical phenomena which scientists and students of psychical research are now investigating. At this present stage of our knowledge along these lines, there are probably few of us who could produce such results deliberately. We might, I think we can produce the exteriorization of the etheric body at will, but it is a much more difficult feat to perform some definite action during the exteriorization. In any case, I feel sure that the nature of the demonstration is decided and carried out by those who have permanently left their earth bodies, the so-called dead who have become accustomed to functioning in their etheric bodies, and who use them as easily as we do our physical ones. On their own plane they operate on their own kind or degree of matter, just as we operate on ours. Difficulties crop up when they or we attempt to operate on each other's planes, that is, when we endeavor to function on their planes, or when they try to function on ours. It is then that both sides have to cooperate. When they produce an effect on the earth, they use their own minds on our physical material, assisted by our etheric power, and in some cases by our mental cooperation. If we set forth with the idea of being used by them, with some definite object in view, we are obviously trying to cooperate both etherically and mentally. In sudden unexpected phenomena we may be cooperating etherically, but not mentally, and this is what happened in the case I have recorded. The night following this levitation, when I retired to bed, I went over to where the table stood, removed the photograph, placed my hands on the table top, exactly as on the previous night, and waited. I stood there for quite a quarter of an hour, then I walked away, waited a while, went back and tried again, but with no result, probably because there was not the sole need of help and comfort, as there had been on the previous night. Even if my husband had been willing on his part to repeat the performance, it is possible that my own astral could not loosen, or exteriorize itself sufficiently to carry out its share of the experiment. On this second occasion I must admit that I was acting partly from curiosity, a desire for a repetition of a phenomenon that may have required a certain effort on his part, and on mine too, though on our side such effort may be made involuntarily and unconsciously. I feel sure we should not seek these things lightly, without some serious and definite object in view, and I was not altogether surprised at my failure. Indeed, I was a little ashamed of attempting to get the levitation again, and while retiring for the night, I humbly apologized for having asked for a repetition of it. I seem to have been asleep for some time, when I was awakened by noises in the room. It was too dark to see what was happening, but I could distinctly hear sounds as if two or three people were moving about. Realizing I had locked the bedroom door before getting into bed, and finding myself in a somewhat cataleptic condition, though absolutely wide awake and conscious in every sense, I realized that something was happening of an interesting nature. Then I heard a loud, scraping noise on the wall, somewhere near the door, as far as I could judge, in the dark. I knew from previous experience that while the phenomena were taking place I should not be able to move my physical body without a strong mental effort, and also that if I made this effort, I should probably put a stop to the phenomena, so I remained passive for a few moments, listening to the sounds around me. I must explain that when one is in the etherically exteriorized condition, yet at the same time perfectly and acutely conscious in the physical, one is sometimes able to exercise psychical faculties which may be dormant in the daily, earthly life, and one may oneself become aware of certain conditions without using the ordinary physical senses through which our faculty of awareness usually functions. On this particular occasion I was aware that my husband was present, also my hostess's husband, who had passed over a few years previously. A strong feeling that they were carrying out some project that amused them came to me. I felt amused myself, though I didn't know the cause of my amusement. Probably my astral brain did, but could not transfer the knowledge to the physical counterpart. The scraping noise and my cataleptic condition ceased at the same time, and I lay for a few minutes thinking over all I had heard, and impressing on my mind the direction in which the noises had been loudest and the most insistent. As usual, after such a demonstration, I soon fell into a deep and peaceful sleep. It is very strange that immediately after such a phenomenon one feels little curiosity as to what has happened. One accepts it in an uninquiring spirit, and it is later on that one begins to wonder how it happened, etc., etc. I slept until the maid knocked at the door with my early tea.